Okay, Tov world. Today's daf in the Sechet Shavuot brought to you from Yerushalayim, Ir HaKodesh, is daf Mem Beit. We're in the middle of all of these various cases that are all nogea or questions of Toin V'nitan and whether we would believe the person under the circumstances. Each one of them begins with Ahudi Amalei Lechabris. We talk about a list of fascinating cases, and it's very enlightening to see how the Gemara sees each one of these cases in the context of the overall dinim. So, Ahudi Amalei Lechavre. So, we're up to the next Ahudi Amalei Lechavre case on Membeit. Havli Mona Dezuze Demaskinabach. Give me the $100 that you owe me. And here's the shtar, so there's nothing to discuss, you know. But I paid you the money back. So the guy responds and says, well, the money that you paid me was not for this loan. The money that you paid me were for other things that I didn't have a shtar on. You were kind enough to pay me on. The shtar remains, and you still owe me the entire loan as it's recorded in this note. Omer of Nachman, well, this is a problem. Why? Because the shtar itself, and it's a continuation of some of the concepts that we spoke about yesterday, are cases where the person weakens the claim of his shtar. So the classic case of this was, of course, the case that is really defined as Yisra Shtar, huh? And that's the case of the ketuvah. So if a woman admits that she had already collected some of her ketuvah, that means that the amount written in the shtar of the ketuvah is no longer really meaningful because now it depends on how much she really received. And that means that the shtar, the value that's written prima facie on the shtar is not really binding. So that's called Isra Shtara, and in that case, you're going to only collect with the shvuah. So now this case, as well, says the Gemara, is a little bit of a compromised shtar. Yisra shtar means it's been compromised. And because of the fact that the person admits that he got money in return, so then he is already weakening the shtar. It's not the same as the case of Pogemet Bektuvata, because over there she admitted that the monies in the shtar were repaid. Over here, he's just admitting that he received money. And therefore, if Papa Amar, no, this is not a case in any way of Isra Shtara, because, look, it's very possible he was paid for something else. There's nothing here that admits that the Shtar itself is not fully effective and meant to be as repaid. Now, according to Rav Papa, why is this if different in any way? The guy opens up, same thing. Here's my contract. You owe me $100. In this case, the person said to him, hey, wait a minute. Did you give me that money as an investment where we were making a deal together? Remember, that's called an iska. And we learned all of the dinim of that iska. Some of it is considered to be, it's partially loan, partially investment. And we make all kinds of adjustments to make sure that there wouldn't be any rebate that would be chal on it. But in any event, we're not going into the details. But the point is that that money was the money for an investment to buy turei, to buy oxen. And later on, not only did I buy that for you, but you actually came and you were atit ve'ativata maschata. You came there and you sat in the butcher shop as they were selling the meat of those shvarim. And I gave you your money back at the time we split the funds as we had admitted. And I don't understand why you're coming back to me now and claiming that I owe you still this money. So in that case, the guy said to him, it's true that you did give me money, and you gave me money for other back for other expenses that I had paid, advertisements and stuff like that. But the actual principal itself is still here. That's why I have this start. And Hanu Citroeninu, those things were for side expenses, but not for the actual money that I'd given you. And over there, Rav Papa himself had said that that is a case of making the shtar a Isra shtar, because he's actually been weakening it by claiming that money was given. But I mean, he didn't say it was the money of the shtar that was given. Why is that any different than this case of Rav Papa? That's because Hatam, given to Omer Aturi Yahavtali, Umitore Shakalta, Itrashtara. There's a big difference in weakening a shtar when the man said to him, that is the defendant, says to the guy who was bringing suit, you gave me the money for Shvarim, and you took the money from the Shvarim, and the person doesn't deny that. He just says there was an additional side expenses that we hadn't discussed. So that was what the money was for. But since over there he admits that he got the money out of the very deal that the money had been given for. So in that case, it's definitely weakening the case of the shtar. Because once he admits that this shtar records a deal that was done for the purchase of Shvarim, and I got money out of those Shvarim at the butcher shop, it's all very nice to claim that there was an additional expenses that the guy was supposed to pay him. But in this case, the money was admittedly given from the deal itself. Masha'inkein, ocha, emer sitroi ninu. In this case, you could actually say that that was true. And that's because of that. There's no reason for me to say that there's any pagam in the shtar, because it's very possible that there's all types of expenses that were not recorded in shtarot. There's nothing that makes me think that this particular money was given for that particular debt. Over here, there certainly is evidence like that. Anyway, my havea, bottom line,
The Rebbe Sitroi is like external
external side, seter, side, sitra, sitra achra, the dark side, right? Sitra. So anyway, bottom line, my havea, what was the psak about that? Rav Papi said that the shtar was not Yisra in that case. And Rav Sheshes Berei the Ravini says it's still Ishad, we can start. Sitroi is not a taina. The Ilchata Itroishtara, that is the halacha, but only in a case where Hanimile defar eba apesahade. It's talking about where we don't need the person's admission that he was paid back. The payback was in front of witnesses. But if there was no witness to the payback, so then the person could just as easily have denied getting any of the money. And therefore, if he was pirate, being the day to day, if they never had external evidence that the payment was made, so in that case, he has a migo. Because migo diyocholo mima lohayu dvarim me'olam. He could have simply denied it. I was never paid any money. Once he could have said that, so then he can explain what that money was for. Yochanan Sitroi Ninu. U kida avimi Abohu, like a case that we have in that similar case where Rabbi Avimi had said in that case that that was the, in that case we had this exodus, in a case that was very similar, that once a person has that migo to say it never happened, then we believe his taina about what had actually happened. Now, another case was Ahudi Omer Lechavri. This is a fascinating new concept. We haven't discussed this before. And that is crediting a person with the right to be believed. So that is a different halacha. We've been talking about, I want you to pay me back in front of witnesses. I want you to pay me back in front of these particular witnesses and so on. But how about if up front, at the time of the loan, the borrower says, part of our deal is that anything that I say and you say is not true, as far as repayment is concerned, you are believed and I am not believed. So whenever you claim to me, I never got the money, I'm telling you right now, you're never going to have any trouble with from me in court, because I'm giving you right now the right to be the one who is believed. So then he goes and he pays the guy back in front of witnesses. So when the guy sued him in court, he brings his witnesses and says, look, here's witnesses that it was paid back. So Abaye Verava Damre Tarvayu, Arne. So Abaye Verava said, well, he said, Beferish, whenever you say I wasn't paid, you are believed. Matki Florif Papa, now wait a minute. He didn't say, whenever you say you're believed. He said, you are Mehemnat Li. What that means is that if it's a question, if I'm remembering correctly or you're remembering correctly, I'm telling you that what you say, I accept. The way you remember it is the way it happened. But where did he ever say that he believes him above objective witnesses? Why would that necessarily be included? Did he ever say that? It's true that he said, look, you know, my memory isn't so great, so I'm telling you right now, I'm not going to argue with you if you say that I didn't pay you. But he never said, did he ever say, more than any witnesses, whatever you say goes? He never said that, and therefore, he shouldn't have to repay it. In fact, another case where somebody said beferish that he does believe him, like witnesses. So who the Omer Lelechavre? Mehemnatli Kivetre. You are believed to be like two witnesses, Kol Imat Deamat Lo Parana. Whenever you say his debt wasn't paid, that is the same as two witnesses saying it. He goes ahead, repays the guy in front of three witnesses. So now what? So Rav Papa said, well, he said, I believe you like two witnesses. And that's the reason that he said two witnesses. He never said, I believe you like three witnesses. Now, wait a second. There isn't really a difference between two witnesses and three witnesses, are there? I mean, legally. No. Yes, there are cases where we go according to the number of opinions. So, for instance, Emo de Ami Rabbana Dazlina Bata Rov de Ot. Where do we go according to a majority of people who are claiming something? That's not immediately in Umdana. Where it has to do with expert assessment. Okay, now there's room for judgment calls, as we all know, about property assessments and so on. You can basically get whatever assessment you want. But anyway, all right. So over there, we will go according to a rov, okay? Because over there, kamad nefishe b'kiyitve, we understand that the more expert opinion we have, the more likely we are to come out with a wrong, to come out with a proper assessment, right? So therefore, in this case, that's not what we're dealing with. We're talking about a fact. Did the money, was it paid or was it not paid? That's testimony. If you say, I believe you like two witnesses, there's no difference between two witnesses and 100 witnesses, because in edut mea ketre vetre kemea. So what's the difference if there's three? You're not going to say that they're more neman than the two, the, so to speak, virtual two that he believed the lender to be. This was one way in which it was said over, which is a little bit overdone, because the Lishna Achrina that keeps it, strips it down to the essential points. The Lishna Achrina is like this. Udi Omerle Lechavre, Mehem Natli Kivei Tre, Kolema De Amart Lo Paran. So it starts off the same. I believe you like two witnesses. He went ahead and he paid him in front of three witnesses. And Rav Papa indeed said, he only said, I believe you like two witnesses, but he never said, he didn't say he was mommy. Now, in this version, Ravuna Bered Rav Yoshua goes straight for the jugular and says, Stan, Bepashtis, what do you mean? Tre kimeha umeya kitre. What's the difference? But, so in other words, we don't get into the question about Umdana or anything like that. But, he adds, if he said to him, and this is the important point of this new Lashon, if initially he had said to him, I believe you like three witnesses. Ah, now, that's very strange. What do you mean, I believe you like three witnesses? So that means that what he's doing is he is specifically noting that the number of opinions matter to him, because there's no such thing as three witnesses. So once he said that, and the guy would go and pay him back in front of four witnesses, now we're getting into a different question. Because since right then, at the time of the law, it was clear that it was a matter of opinions, right? Because he said three witnesses. So once he was nachit de'ot, he got down to what's the bottom line of the number of opinions. So once that's the truth, he says it depends on the number of people. So nachit de'ot, in this case, four is better than three, because we're talking about opinions. Now let's move on to the next piece of the Mishnah, now that we've finished all of our cases. The Mishnah said, Einish ba'ina ta'anat chereshet katan, ve'ein mashbi'in et ha'katan. Now, the question over here, as we're going to see, remember we learned the Mishnah when we learned the Mishnah, we learned it according to the way that the Gemara actually ends up understanding it here. But our initial take on it is that what the Mishnah means is that we will not be mashbia a katan and not mashbia on a taina of a katan. So we won't be mashbia for the needs of a katan. Now let's see how that ties into the Mishnah. So first of all, why is it so obvious that you cannot, as a katan, or a cheresh or a sheita, someone without das, cannot bring a suit that will be mechayev someone to respond with a shvuah? Where do we get that from? And it's very important to note where it comes from, because there may be a significant difference in a different case where the pasuk wouldn't apply. So what the pasuk talks about is ki yitain ish el re'ehu Kesev o kelim lishmar. Now, why does it say yitain ish el re'ehu? Ish el re'ehu means that the person has to be an adult with that. That's what ish means. So since the entire parsha that talks about the shemrim, where we had the eruv parshiot of the concept of kihuzeh, which was meida b'mitzas, in the middle, it starts off with a case that is brought by an ish, kitain ish, and einatinat katan klum, which means that the katan, a non-ish, would be insufficient for us to continue. There's nothing else to say. This is not the case of kitain ish, and therefore we don't view it as creating the chiyuvim of the shvua. But then you say, Aval nishba'im lekatan alahekdesh. What? You will be mashbia to it. I don't understand. Didn't you just say a minute ago, you are not nishba to a katan? And then you go ahead and you say, but you are nishba to a katan. And to hekdesh. Now, how is that not a contradiction? Arbitration, Einish Bono, Tanat Shotevikatan. What am I missing here? Omar Rav, well, you just explained it yourself. Was it not true that the basis of not being Nishba to the Katan was because of the Pasuk? The Pasuk says that only in a case where an Ish had given something to someone to watch. Yeah, now let's think about that. How about if the Katan's father had given something to someone, and now the Katan is going to court to try to get the money that the father had given to someone? Now, isn't that a ki'iten ish? Yes. Did the Pasuk ever say a Katan can't go to court? No. It said we won't have the din of moda b'miktzas if the Katan was the one who had given the money. But in this case, his father gave the money. So the entire limitation would not apply. Therefore, that's the whole beautiful way that Rebbe included this remez in the Mishnah. You're not Nishbona Natainas Katan, and then I tell you are Nishbona. Obviously, this forces you to look into the basis of this Svara, which is the Pasuk of Ki Yitenish. Ha! Beautiful. Now, Rebbe Eliezer Ben Yaakov is the basis of that, says Rob. Because it says in a Braita, Rebbe Eliezer ben Yaakov omer, pe'amim she'adam nishba al ta'anat atzmo. There are times when a person would swear on the basis of his own words that created the taina against him. How is that? Well, I'm going to show you. Ketzad. Somebody says to a person, mane la'avicha biyadi. So he says to the person who is orphaned, he says to him, you know, your father had given me a money, and I already repaid him half of it. Chaltiv pras, I want you to know, I still owe you the $50. So, hareze nishba, he has to be mashbia. Has to be nishba, that he's, because this is a murder of a mixas. But there was no taina against him. He was the one that created the chiyuv. So zel nishba ta'anat atzmo. So therefore he has to be nishba. Whereas the chachamim say, now wait a minute. This is a classic example of the, what we call the Good Samaritan laws. A person who basically gives away things, he didn't have to go over to this kid and say, your father gave me money, did he? And when he did that, he was returning, like any other Aveda, he was returning money on his own cognizance. And we have a general halacha that when somebody does that, he never has to swear if there's money still left over. So we talked about a case where somebody returns a wallet with $50 in it, and the person who owns the wallet says, thank you very much, but where's the other $50? So over there, that's a moida b'miktzas, and we do not say that he's chayev. That's a takana, because otherwise who's going to be able... it's like nowadays where nobody does anything for anybody, because the next thing you know, you end up in court. So therefore, how could you say that this is different than any other Meshiva Aveda? So how can we make the guy swear? He's a good guy trying to give back money that he owes. And now when he says, well, it's only $50 that I owe, so now he has to swear? Okay, so let me ask you, let's take a look at this a little bit. Do you really believe that Rebbe Eliezer ben Yaakov does not agree to any of the Good Samaritan laws? We never found anybody that said there was no such takana. So obviously, Rebbe Eliezer ben Yaakov, letle meshiva veda potter, obviously you don't understand the case, because if you think that this is a classic Meshiva Veda, and that Rebbe Eliezer ben Yaakov nonetheless is being Mechayev you, then that simply doesn't add up. There's clearly a missing piece over here. So why doesn't he consider this to be a regular case of Meshiva Veda? Omar Rav, Rebbe Eliezer ben Yaakov was talking about where initially Was it on the guy's own cognizance that he said, your father gave me $100? There was a kid that came along and says, I know that my father gave you $100 and I want you to pay it back. Then Rebeliezer says, yes, it's true. Your father did lend me $100, but I paid back half of it. So now Rebeliezer is saying that is not the same as a Meshiva Veda. So even though he wouldn't have been Mechuyev on the basis of the child's claim, but the moment that he admitted to it, so then it becomes a claim of his own. So since he opened up his fat mouth and he said, yes, it's true, so then he actually was Mechuyev himself. That's why he has to swear. So in this case, it would be true that normally it would be potter, but since he said that it's true, so we're calling it swearing not on the basis of the tviya of the katan, because ultimately he wouldn't have to swear on the basis of that tviya alone. We're calling it swearing on the basis of his own tviya. Well, I understand. What do you mean? He's responding to a cotton. He doesn't have to respond to a cotton. Cotton. That's as if it was a Meshiva Veda, isn't it? I mean, he was not required to say anything. He could have just gone whistling all the way to the bank. If ultimately you're telling me he's swearing because this kid claims, who cares if the kid claims? Why is he swearing? He's a katan. Oh, no, he's not a katan. What? He's not a katan? You said he's a katan. Yeah, but he's really a gadol. How is that? Le'olam gadol. So why did Rav say a case of a katan? Because even an adult, I don't care how old he is, if he is coming to sue on the basis of something that happened between his father deceased and this person, he's the equivalent of a katan, because a parent never really shares the details with his kids. And so for all intents and purposes, he's like a katan. That's what we mean. So my karilu katan, to the gabi mili de avua katanu. Somebody, if he's coming to claim on the basis of what he knows of his father's business, he doesn't really know his father's business. That's the point. So now I'm really confused. So then, why does Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov say he's being nishpa on his own taina? That's not his own taina. Here's a fully grown adult who comes and makes a claim, and he's being motive and mixas, and he's chayev to pay. I don't understand why he's saying sometimes people will pay even on the basis of their own taina. This is not his own taina. This is a classic taina sacharim. Yeah, it is a taina sacharim, but it's only the fact that he was made that's b'chayev him to pay, because he didn't have to say anything, since he could say, what do you know about your father's business? Excuse me, I got news for you. Every motive of mixas is now every motive of mixas. If you wouldn't have said, yes, you're right, I owe you half, you wouldn't have had to swear. So you might as well call every motive of mixas is somebody who is responding to his own taina. I mean, it's ridiculous. You've said the guy is not a kata. So why is this called al taina's atzmo? Kulunamita anata chirim vahoda'at atzmo. There's no way that he would have called that a non-typical motive of mixas. How would the Rabbanan say that you're potter in such a case? It makes no sense. So therefore, there's got to be a whole different understanding. You know what? Let's go back to what we thought. It was a little bit iffy to say that really he was a gadol. We're only calling him a katan. No, that's not the point. Let's go back to what we thought. He was a katan. Okay, so now we have a question. If he was a katan, then why is the response to the tfiya of a katan mechayev a person to take a shvuah? I thought that the Mishnah clearly stated that you are not going to need to take a shvuah if you respond positively to the tviya of a katan. Isn't that what it says? And that's what happened over here. A cutter comes along, says you owe money, and it says over here that he does have to pay. How could he not have to pay? So, what's the pshat? So therefore, we have to understand the machlokas between the Chachamim and Reb Eliezer ben Yaakov down at the basis of it. The point over here is that the machlokas is about Rabba's din. Let's go all the way back to the psychology that lies behind the halacha of Meida B'Mitzvahs. And based on that psychology, let's try to understand the particular case over here of the Kata. Actually, remember that fundamental idea that analyzed the whole concept of a Meida B'Mitzvahs. It starts off like this. Elma Rab, Mipnei Ma Amra Torah, Modeh B'Mitzvah Ta'ana Yishava. What is actually the basis of the whole idea? Why would it be that because he's motive partially, therefore he should have to swear? I mean, you'd think the exact opposite is true, no? I mean, the guy is essentially an honest man, and he could have said, I don't owe you anything, and then the Torah wasn't mechayev him, and now he says, I'm an honest guy, and I admit that I did owe you that money, and you seem to have forgotten that I paid you back half. Why isn't that itself hashavas aveda? If the Torah allowed the guy to say, I don't owe you anything, and you say that we have a general rule that a good Samaritan, I use that word very sarcastically, that a good Samaritan is a meshiv aveda, every motive of mitzvah is a meshiv aveda. He should have said, I don't owe you anything. Instead, he goes in and he says, I owe you something. So now because of that, he does have to swear. Because of that, he shouldn't have to swear. So what is the logic of this? It has to be. Torah is not just talking nonsense. We're mechuyev to understand what this is based on. So essentially, says Rabba, it seems clear that the problem over here is that we have a chazak. Chazak is that ein adam me'iz panav bifnei ba'al chovo. Essentially, somebody does you a favor, he lends you money, and now you're going to say, nah, never happened, straight to his face. That's something that is very rare for an individual to have that type of brazenness. It's disgusting. So therefore, we assume that be'etzem, of course, he couldn't just say, I don't owe you any money. And because of that, what we need to assume is that he's not a meshiv aveda because he simply doesn't have it in him. You see, a meshiv aveda didn't have to do anything. This guy has to respond. He can't say, I don't owe you anything. So therefore, it is not a standard case of a meshiv aveda. In fact, the person really is psychologically limited to saying, I gave you some of it. Because the truth is, as much as he would like to deny it and to really get away without needing to admit to anything, he simply can't. So the truth is, he would have wanted to. The only reason that he didn't is because he can't. So, that's Bisham Deino de Meizpanav, Bifne Ba'al Chovol. So because of that, the Torah doesn't view him as a Meshiv Aveda. Now, what you should say, therefore, is, now wait a minute, if this guy is the kind of guy that is ready to completely deny if he could, so why make him swear? I mean, maybe he'll just swear B'Sheker also, right? Ah, no, of course not. Because the truth is, there's an alternative drive in him that, look, I can't deny it. So if I can't deny it, so don't deny it, pay it back, right? What do you mean deny half of it? So there's also another side to this whole story. The other side to the whole story is, it's not that we're dealing with a criminal over here. This guy is essentially an honest guy who would like to pay back his debts and therefore certainly is not the kind of person who would lie about a shvua like you're saying. Well, I mean, if he's a liar and he's ready to walk off with half of it, so then how can we have him swear? I thought people that are ready to steal money, we don't believe their shvua anyway. So how would the Torah say, let him take a shvua? Because, you see, we have no reason to conclude that this guy is a phony, that this guy's a criminal, that this guy's a liar who's ready to walk off. There's another very simple explanation. The person owes the money. The person wants to pay the money. And the person does not want the court to be coming into his house tomorrow and taking away his TV because he doesn't have any money right now. Now, so what he figures is, okay, if I can put this off and still come out smelling like a rose, so I'll say, gosh, yes, oh, I'm so grateful for that money you lend me, but don't you remember I paid you back half? Now, I have half the money in the bank, so I could pay it back to him. If I just get myself another week, I'll be able to raise the funds from other people, and I could pay this guy back. Instead of getting into this terribly embarrassing situation of having the court go to Hotzah Lepol and they'll take away my TV and then I'm going to miss my favorite program. Let me put it off for a week, right? That's what the guy's thinking. So it's possible. There's no reason for us to conclude that his shvuah is not Neman, because really we could say, Bekulei boy dulo delay, he would love to pay the whole thing back. And the only reason he doesn't is because he's putting things off. He doesn't have the cash. So he wants to avoid the din. So he figures to himself, Sava, I'm going to run around this week. I'm going to raise the money. I got some stuff I wanted to sell anyway. I have cash coming in. So Ada Havili Zuze, when I get the cash, then I'll pay him the whole thing. I'll come back and say, oh, I'm so sorry. I forgot that I never paid you. That was for something else. I apologize. And then I'll give him the rest of the money. Therefore, comes along the Torah to say, Rami Shvua Adli, this basically honest man, would never dream of making a Shvua Sheker. So put him in a position where, in order to buy himself time, he's going to get into this awful situation of needing to make a Shvua. Then he's not going to buy himself time. Then he's going to kiss his TV set goodbye. So, this way, you'll be made on the whole thing. That's the basic psychology as Rabbah explained it. So that we both have a basis for believing the person Shvua if he takes the Shvua and an understanding of why he wouldn't just have said, I don't owe you anything if that's all he wanted to do. Why is it worse to say, oh, you have? It's worse to say, oh, you have, because we understand the psychological pressure that he's under, okay? Now, understanding that brings us to this discussion, the machlokas between Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov and the Chachamim, about the question of the tfiyah of a katan. Must I respond, and therefore, in this case, I would be swearing if I said that I owe it? Or, as the Chachamim said, you're a nice guy. You're a Meshiva Veda. Oh, hold on. Every time that somebody admits to owing something where he could have been Kofar Bakol, he's a Meshiva Veda. And nonetheless, we swears. Why? Because he is psychologically driven to admit some of it because he just can't face the guy. Tell me to my face, I never lent you that money. No, I can't do that. But now the question is, does that apply to the child of the person that did the favor to him? That's the question. What is the depth of the psychological eluts that he feels? Is it something that has to do with the person and the embarrassment of the person? Or is it a deeper response to an embarrassment of dependency? And it's an embarrassment about himself. Now that's the question. So Rabbi Eliezer Ben Yaakov says, look, it doesn't make any difference whether it's the guy or it's the guy's son. I mean, you're basically facing the teva that was done for you, and you're saying it never happened. Can't do it. So in the case where it's his son, he is no more a Meshiv Aveda than to the original person who made the loan. And therefore, Eino Me'iz, he's not going to be a chutzpanyak like that to actually be able to say to the son's face. So he's not a Meshiv Aveda because he just can't, doesn't have it in him to say, I don't owe it to you at all. Okay, so if that's the case in such an event, he would have to be Nishma. Whereas the Rabbon and Savre, it's only in the face of the person. It's the personal relationship. It's not the event that makes the person embarrassed. And people do have that type of disgusting ha'azah in front of the ben. So b'fnei b'no, he would be me'iz. And since he was a good enough person to be Modad, yeah, I do owe you part of it. So then he's a classic Meshiv Aveda, because this particular case of Modad B'Mitzvah, since it's not in the presence of the actual individual who is now deceased, therefore the Rabbanan said, so then there's no din of Modad B'Mitzvah. This actually brings us into the clarity of the interrelation, which has always been sitting there in the back of our minds, like, well, how do we square the whole din of Modad B'Mitzvah with the Good Samaritan laws? It's the Torah is basically telling you the opposite. Ah, so now we understand. Understanding that, and this, of course, is the way the Mishnah always works, right? It's only as you get closer and closer to the detailed differences that you're forced to confront the underlying issues that are based, the whole basis of the din. So again, that's the derech of the Gemara, is that we discover gradually what the issues are. We don't start off with the discussion of principles, which then would limit us to being able to rediscover those principles, which is the way that we would always work, let's say, in science. We talk about phenomena, and then we try, based on those phenomena, to work out the principle. Then we make predictions on those principles. Then we find out whether they're true. It's exactly the same thing. We've got a list of cases. We just had a list of all of those cases. Ahudi Amalei, Ahudi Amalei. Gradually, we get to the point of, now what principle would lie behind that? And therefore, we end up with this understanding of the machlokas between Rabbi Eliezer Ben Yaakov and the Rabbanan. Anyway, there's a big problem with this. Because the only way that it works to read the Mishnah the way we just read it, which is that we are Nishboyim Lakata, and that seems to be saying we are Nishboyim to the legal claim of a Kata, is a big problem, because it only works according to Rabbi Eliezer Ben Yaakov. But the Mishnah does not seem to be going like Rabbi Eliezer Ben Yaakov. So how could Rav, Mimatis Mukmet like Rabbi Eliezer Ben Yaakov? But does it really make sense to say that our Mishnah works because it's going like Rabbi Eliezer Ben Yaakov? Remember that before the Mishnah said, Okotani Reisha, Monela Abba Biyadecha, Enlecha Biyadi Elecha Mishim Dinar, Patur, Bipnesha Meshiv Avedahu. I don't understand. If the Mishnah says Beferish, that when somebody makes a claim about his father's stuff, and the guy responds that, yes, I did take a loan, but I paid half it back, it says beferish that it's Hashavas Aveda. I don't understand. How are we focusing only on the last case in the Mishnah, and we're going to go say that that's Rabbi Eliezer Ben Yaakov, which is based on it's not being Hashavas Aveda because of the psychological problems, if the Mishnah itself said that it is Hashavas Aveda? That's crazy. No, it's not crazy, because actually there are two different cases. In that first case where we said clearly he's a Meshiv Aveda, the case over there was talking about where the guy came along and he says, listen, I'm absolutely sure. Now, did he say that? No. He said, I think that my dad had paid, given you money, and that was never repaid. I mean, I can't be sure it was never repaid. I'm not sitting there by his side for the past 50 years to know whether you ever repaid that money. But, I mean, I never heard that you repaid it. Okay? You never heard that you repaid it. No? You know, I mean, I'm so sorry that you never heard about it. But, you know, me and your dad, I mean, we had all kinds of business dealings. I had paid that back ages ago. I mean, if the person himself says he doesn't know, but he just wants to make sure. So obviously, in that case, it's not him. There's nothing in him that makes it embarrassing for him to say that, actually, I paid him back. Yeah, you don't know. I do know. Okay, great. But in this case, what we're talking about, that you do need to respond, according to Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, that's where he says, I know you never paid that money back. That in that case, Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov holds that the same way he's not going to be me'iz panav k'neged the father, he won't be me'iz panav k'neged ben. That's easy to explain. I mean, what do you think? I'm crazy. I'd forgotten the beginning of the Mishnah, really. So the standard case, when a child claims, my father gave you money. That's all he said. Mana lavi biyadecha. That's all he said. He didn't say you never paid it back. So it's always just sort of a questioning kind of thing. You know, my dad lent you money? Yeah, but of course I paid him back. Okay. Now, the way that we had explained the Mishnah initially avoids all of these problems with one beautiful stroke. That when it says that we're nishboyim lekotan velehegdish, and this is brilliant, because look, what does katan and hegdish have to do with each other? What are we talking about? We're nishboyim lekotan velehegdish, like these are two totally separate issues, and we just happen to throw in nishboyim lehegdish. Come on. Therefore, says Shmuel, no, the Mishnah is talking about something entirely different. The Mishnah is not talking about a claim of a katan. It's not talking about a claim of Agdash. There's another beautiful reason what we're talking about in swearing to a katan that relates it directly to swearing to Agdash. This is so stunning, this explanation. And what would be the case? So katan has something of his own. He's got clear ownership of a piece of property, no problem, legally purchased on such and such a date, everything fine. Hegdesh has a legal property that had been transferred to Hegdesh. The Gizbar could show you when it was transferred to Hegdesh. So everything great. Now, it's 5 years later. Comes along a Baal Chov, and he presents a contract that was dated the day before that transaction happened, or the year before, whatever. And he's got a contract that the person who sold or who donated to Hegdesh, or who sold to the Katan, or gave to the Katan this property, had sold the property, actually, had made a loan, had taken a loan from him, and he was chayev. Here's the contract. That contract created a lien on this property. I came back today, 5 years later, when he owed me the loan, and he says, oh my gosh, I don't have any money to pay back the loan, and I don't have any free property. Well, I say to him, what was the last property that you had sold after the time that I made the loan to you? Well, I'd given away that property to Hegdesh, or I had given away that property to this Katan. Oh, well, we're so sorry, Mr. Hegdesh. We're so sorry, Mr. Katan, but the guy who made this gift actually didn't own it because I have a pre-existing lien on that gift. Okay, so normally what would we do? We would say, okay, that means that the Katan does not own this property, and the Hegdesh does not own this property, right? But we think to ourselves, now, wait a minute. What is to prevent these two people, the putative lender and the putative borrower? Maybe it never happened. Maybe there had been a loan. It had been totally paid up. And now the lender goes to the borrower and says, listen, you and me both need cash. There's a simple solution for both of us. Let's go to court. I will sue you. You will admit that you never paid back this loan, even though you did, and that the only way I can get my money is by our going after the property that you had given away to Hegdesh, or that you had sold to this Katan, and then we split it. I get half, you get half. Great idea. Now that's called Kenunia. Okay, Kenunia is we get together to defraud. And how can we prevent that Kenunia? That's what it's talking about. We in the court, when somebody comes in with what looks like a perfectly understandable situation, there was a pre-existing debt, the guy admits that he owes the money, so what could be wrong? What could be wrong is that they plan to split the money after they take it away from Hegdesh and Akatan. That's what could be wrong. So in that case, we say in the courtroom, look, we don't accept just at face value the fact that you are both agreed as to what happened, because there's a very sneaky reason why you might be agreeing that this is what happened. We have to make sure that there's no kenunia. Therefore, we say, listen, before the court will entertain this motion to recover the property, you need to swear that this is the actual situation. And why do we put it together with Hegdesh? Ah, that's the brilliant point. Because if we hadn't mentioned that in this case you need to swear about not having made a kenunia against Hegdesh, I would have thought, oh, come on, how cynical can you be? People you really think would get together and would make a kenunia against Hegdesh? I mean, chas v'shalom, that is kotche kotchim. What am I going to touch? Nah, you need to be cynical. And therefore, it's telling us that people will make a kenunia even against Hegdesh. That's why we put the two together. That in the same way that even though Einish born al Ta'anat Katan, absolutely, that's true. This has nothing to do with the Ta'anat Katan. This is Bezdin insisting that we need to know that this is a valid suit. And in order for us to entertain your suit, we need to establish that you're not playing games with us. And therefore, we insist on it. Beautiful. Let's see that inside. So Shmuel Amar, look, when it says over here, we swear to a katan, doesn't mean we swear to the claim of the katan. It means we swear in order to collect from a katan. And when it says over here that we swear to Hegdesh, it doesn't mean on the claim of Hegdesh. It means li parami nirse Hegdesh, because in fact, the idea of kitain ish is also ish v'lo Hegdesh, not only ish v'lo katan. The two go together. So therefore, what was the case? Why do we need to know that? Because these are cases that otherwise I would have said, maybe you don't need to make a shvuah. But wait a second. We know a Mishnah says beferish. This is a Mishnah we haven't gotten to yet. But next week we're going to see this Mishnah, that it says beferish, and the Mishnah later on, mirichse yitomim, somebody who's coming to collect from yitomim, can only collect if he makes a shvuah. Now, in this case where he's coming to collect from this katan, who inherited this property from his dad, he needs to make a shvuah. So I understand why do I need two different mishnayos telling me the same thing, that the katan doesn't know what's going on. We need to establish that this is for real and not a kenunia. Ah, good point. But, says Shmuel, it's not a problem. We do need to have two different mishnayos. Why? Because our kamashman, by repeating the halacha twice, we cover another problem. And that is kedabaya kashisha. When we say later on this idea of yitomim. Now, people think generally, unless they are Bikim and Gilbert and Sullivan, they are taking for granted that when somebody says, but I am an orphan boy. That he's probably a child, because he's an orphan boy. Never occurs to them that this is the 90-year-old general who's claiming that he's an orphan, and therefore the pirates should let him go, because he's a poor orphan. And they all start crying, the poor orphan. Yes, indeed. So Abaye Kashisha wants you to know that when it says, Eini Ephraim Minichse Yitomim, it means adults, 90-year-old orphans, because, as we said before, that the issue over here is that if it's something that came from outside him, and he doesn't know the detail, so because of that, we still have the court as insisting that we know that there should be no kinunya. Tatani Abaye Kashisha, when it says over there, Yitomim, it means even Gedolim, not to mention Ketanim, that we're certainly going to try to protect. And that's true both for the Dinim that are unique to orphans. It says over there, that Ein Ephraim Ella Beshvua, and there's another special halacha about orphans. That's namely that you can only collect from Ziburit, and that's the worst property that he's got. Normally, you can collect for a loan. You can collect from Beinonis. Both of those takonas apply, whether it's a 10-year-old orphan or a 90-year-old orphan. That's the point. So we need the two Mishnayos to establish. If I tell you this halacha twice, you understand I don't need to tell you the din twice. Obviously, I'm extending the din in such that it will apply even to the 90-year-old orphan. That's the point. And then when it says lehegdash, it would have to mean lipara minichse hegdash. That's how Shmuel understands it. But that also doesn't make sense, because later on the Mishnah says that when you're coming to collect minachasim mishuabadim, meaning you're taking away property from someone who has this property, now you want to utilize a lien on the property. So it says, lo yiparu ela bishvua. So whenever you're going to collect from someone who doesn't have currently have free property to collect from, and you're going to have to go after his properties in order of their most recent sale, right? So the din is over there. You always have to swear with a shvuah. So I don't understand. Why do I need a halacha that you swear to Hagdash? Of course you swear to Hagdash. Why not? What's the difference? Ma'li mishu abadim lehediot? Ma'li mishu abadim legavoa? If the din is that when you're going after someone else who knows nothing about what happened, and he's a poor guy who just bought a piece of property, he had no idea that there was any kind of lien on it, that we always make the person swear. So why wouldn't we make him swear to Hagdash? Why would the Mishnah have to even mention it? Ah, because I might have thought, it's a Salkadata Kamina, I might have thought, yes, against another individual, we are worried that an Adam Osek Nunya al Hedyot. So we might have a little conspiracy over here in which they are ready to split the proceeds of recovering this property for a debt that had already been paid off, which is why he's admitting that he owes the money. But for Hagdash, good Lord, certainly ain Adam Osek Nunya al Hagdash. Therefore comes on the Mishnah to say that's not true, and we need to suspect even against Hagdash or Kanunya. Therefore, we need this Mishnah to tell me that we are going to make the guy swear. Is this true, though? Didn't Ravuna say that if a guy is on his deathbed, he's a Shchiv Meira, and he gives all of his things away to Hagdash, and then he says, look, I just want you to know that I'm giving away all of my things, but, I mean, there's money that I owe that I can't give away. And out of the money that I just gave to Hagdash, so-and-so has $1 million of that, you know, he's Neman. Why? Because Chazaka and Anamosik Nunyala Egdesh. If now his saying that he's supposed to pay this guy $1 million is going to cost Egdesh $1 million, we do not suspect such a thing. What do you mean? You just told me in this Mishnah, Beferish, that Shmuel understands the Mishnah. We do suspect such a thing. So why don't we suspect it here? So they said, Amre, Ami Mile, what it was that Ravuna was talking about was a Shechiv Meira. This is a guy who is dying. You're telling me that on his deathbed, he decides he wants to go straight to hell by claiming that Hegdesh is really out $1 million. This way, he benefits by giving somebody $1 million. Now, who's going to benefit somebody with $1 million in exchange for 1 million groans in hell? Nobody. So therefore, we don't suspect the person on his deathbed of making a kanunia of Hegdesh. Okay. That doesn't mean that somebody who's a day away from his deathbed is not going to be making a kanunia al Hegdesh. Those are everybody else in the world. They're ready to make a kanunia al Hegdesh. Insane, you say? So it is. But as we know, we're all insane. And therefore, we have to worry that maybe in a case like Shmuel's case, which is the case of our Mishnah, that a person would be making a kanunia al Hegdesh. So, hane mile, if the guy is shchiv meira. So he really takes seriously what nobody else believes. He thinks he's going to die. So if that's the case, he's not ready to make a kanunia al Hegdesh. But nobody else believes that. And therefore, they are ready to make a kanunia al Hegdesh. So, in adam chote velolo, a person's not going to go ahead in order to benefit a third party, which he will have no take at all, since he will be safely and cozily dead. He's not going to be chote in order that somebody else makes the money. But somebody who's healthy and who is never going to die, so avagabe bori, vadei chashin, and of course we have to worry that he would make a knunya, even kineged hegdesh. Wow. Whew. Lessons of human psychology. Boy, what a strange species. Whew. Anyway, it never ceases to amaze how crazy we all are. Huh? Amazing.